This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
We've been exploring ethics and ethical guidelines and the interface between mindfulness and ethics. And what we've been doing is looking at different aspects of ethics. So the first week we looked at the kind of a guideline not to protect life. And the second week we looked at speech. And then after that, we looked at what we call what we consume. So I gave you an assignment. And what I'd love to hear now, if you wouldn't mind putting the chat, or if anyone wants to share on camera, what you learned and what you did and what you learned, if that happened. So someone wrote, I've adjusted my morning routine. No cell phone review, no morning talk show, just looking out at the sunrises and the beauty of the day for a few minutes. Okay, this is a really nice example of a change that you can make that can impact how you just the quality of life, really. Dana, I love that. I mean, it's wonderful. I'm curious, just even with like a thumbs up or so, how's it going? Like, has it been more pleasurable? Has it been more enjoyable? What happened as you did that? So you can give us, you can continue to respond in the chat or come on. I see Sudha has the hand up.
I usually check my weekly report on my phone, how long I've been staying on phone, and then I take 1 hour, I deduct 1 hour, and you know, next week I do 1 hour less. Actually, it gives me not reducing suddenly too much. Because I don't think I can do that. I mean, nobody can do that. And then it gives me categorically where I spend a lot more time, and I can adjust that. But I, after looking at my weekly report, I can adjust my time on the phone. Thank you.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And what people do, I mean, a lot of people that I've seen trying to get people to use their phone less, like when people who write books about this, they're always, you start by assessing what it is you're doing currently, and then looking at the screen time. I've noticed the screen time, at least on an iPhone, is a little funky. Like, it'll, you know, if you happen to be on a map, if you happen to be using like your GPS, it'll give you like 45 minutes of screen time, and you're like, wait, I just was using the map. So it's not perfect, but it's really good to assess, and then you can make the decision. And I like that. I like that you're like, okay, I'm going to do an hour less, but then that was too much, right? And then you got more realistic. And so that's a wonderful approach to it. And sounds great. Are you going to say more, Sudha?
Yeah. What I was saying is that usually I have like hour time for the inside timer for meditation. I take that into consideration. That's not my time. I'm not wasting that time. That's my time.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's not, I mean, the hours on our phone are not necessarily a bad thing. It's what we do with it, obviously. So if it were, 14 hours on the phone, looking at news, we know we have a problem. If it is meditating with our timer, that's actually 14, good thing.
I usually have like 2 or 3 hours on phone, my time on with phone, not more than that.
I think you're in the low category. I forget. I think the average for sort of adults is like 4 hours. I think for kids, it's like way, way, way beyond that. But yeah, sounds like you're doing great work. Awesome. Thank you. I'm going to go to the, I know Dana, were you going to come on camera? Or you just, because I asked you that question. Oh, you're saying it's hard, but you've done it pretty successfully. Fantastic. That's great. Other people, like, I just want to read some of the chat. I've been aware. Oh, so someone went back to the speech one, and I've been more aware of how my speech affects others. So for those of you who weren't here, we looked at speech a few weeks prior to that. So fantastic, Mike. I'm glad to hear that you've been exploring that. And then Hiroki said, initially, I noticed that my nervousness of letting go of junk social media would viewing would be so sad. So I saw an increase in emotional attachment to my less important social media viewing. However, overall, I was more able to practice more positive, inspirational digital media consumption. So overall, I think I improved my quality in digital media. Great, great, fantastic. This is it. This isn't all an experiment. It's like, there's no one size fits all for everyone, but what we have is the mindfulness to help us notice the effect, and then we can make different choices if we need to. Margie said the book Bored and Brilliant is excellent. Many actionable suggestions, clear and simple concepts. I deleted some apps and limited notifications. Progress. Yeah, I really like that book too, and recommend it if you want to look at just some support around this and those kinds of things, deleting apps, notif reducing notifications. Hold on, my dog wants to get out. And then Hiroki was continued on and said, I was able to ask my question, how is this viewing affecting my mind? This is like a beautiful question because this is what kind of my, remember I said, what kind of mind do you want to have? And Hiroki's way of framing it is, how is this viewing affecting my mind? It could be that you look at social media and suddenly you see a person you haven't seen in a long time and you just feel joyous and it's wonderful. That's a great use of it. But you could look at social media and be comparing and feeling bad about yourself. So how is it affecting my mind? These are great questions. And then also, how do you feel afterwards? That's another thing to pay attention to. Like after I look at social media, or news, do I feel just sunk? Do I feel jealous? Do I feel like my life is inferior or whatever? There's a lot of things you can feel, or maybe I feel pretty uplifted and upbeat. So that's the way. So that's why I go back to, there's no one size fits all with this. We've got to find our way with it. And because I even had this thing when I started, I was thinking like, I just want to get off the phone completely. I want to just throw it into the Pacific Ocean. I had that thought for a while. And then I was like, wait a minute. There are so many things that I really find useful that I like that are enjoyable, like the music or there's many, not many things, but there are some things that are meaningful to me, and I didn't want to get rid of that. So keep coming back to that question, how is this affecting my mind? What kind of mind do I want to have? And heart, you could add that. Someone else was working with speech and said, I take time in between my speech so I can see people's reaction. Right. Really cool. I spend less time on social media and checking emails. Instead, I stay aware of my surroundings, a present moment experience. Great. Carl said, I tried to reduce some consumption, but was not really successful this week. We'll try again. It's absolutely a process. You don't have to get it perfectly. I wanted to be mindful when I'm on YouTube. I was on it less and found lots of better ways to spend time. It's partially, it's like we set the intention. And then also I think the other thing is, what do we fill it with? Right. So it's not just I'm going to stop doing it, but what am I going to fill my time with? If I don't fill it with something that is meaningful to me, then I'm probably going to go back to old habits. But if I put into that space that's opened up something that is important, then it can really sustain it. I see Dana has appeared. Do you want to say something?
Yeah, sorry, I was having trouble. Can you hear me now?
I can, yeah.
Thank you. What I found with the little things that I've done, like my morning routine, except the dog still is priority because she has to go out and be fed, but is I'm not wasting time. I find that I'm getting ready to go do things earlier. I'm going to the gym earlier. I'm not sitting around just watching the TV or looking at my phone. I'm doing things. which has been really, really, really helpful to me, because I know I've been kind of like stuck in this routine. But it's hard because I still want to pick up my phone right away and see what's happened to my friends. But I don't miss the news part. I really don't miss that. But the phone is the harder part.
Yeah. And I mean, it's great that you're trying and then you're observing the impact. Oh, this is what feels hard, but this one I can do. And so then we lean towards where it's easier, and we work with ourselves with a lot of compassion where it's harder. But this is totally doable. Manjay.
Yeah, hi, thank you. I wanted to say I really enjoyed that the last week's lesson about the precepts and the impact, you know, the impact they have on us and the world, and everybody around us feels safer when we keep them. So I was watching this week that I'm very committed to my precepts and really intentionally, I'm intentional about it. And then I realized this week that, oh my God, there are things that are in the way, like some people are alluding to here too. Perception, right? The way you see something, the way you interpret something could be just totally not appropriate, you know, or attention, attentiveness, you know, like, oh, let's take care of business. I'm busy. I'm going out of the country. I got to take care of this. I got to take care of that. And that could be some way. I mean, I experienced it and it was really painful for me that I saw that. Oh, wow. I got dumbfounded actually when I realized that I was in a position that I was. So I just want to say it's not easy to be human. It's not. And then, you know, trying to also always self and analyze, it works for me. And I'm grateful for the tools that we've learned from you, all these classes, all the retreats, you know, and just to be reminded it's necessary to constantly be in the listen to these things for reminder. And so, yeah, I wanted to say perception and attentiveness are important. Yeah. Thank you.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks for saying that. And it isn't easy. You know, we get hijacked by our habitual patterns all the time. And then the world is sending us down one direction. And I think the important thing is you saw it and you went, oh, okay. And you just course correct, right? And with a forgiving attitude. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Okay, hang on, a couple more, and then we're going to get to a new guideline in a moment. I'm not into my phone or social media, but it's so easy to get overwhelmed by all the emails we get, most of which are not important, can be a big time drain. Yes, I know, I know, I know. There are, I mean, people may be familiar with different, like, kind of apps you can get that sorts your email, or I use something. I mean, I'm not like advertising this, but it works for me. It's called SaneBox, S-A-N-E box, and it like pulls out the ones that don't seem important, and then I kind of look at it once a day, and that is a helpful thing. But I think you're pointing to the bigger issue of the way email is really out of control, and people expect answers immediately, and it's hard to get lost in that. And I think it's almost like, I mean, the same with texting. I don't know, but people expect text responses right away. And so I think it's partially around communicating with people we love, like, yeah, I'm not going to answer that right away, or I answer it. I know people that put things on their email, like I only answer 2 days a week or something, but I don't know. I don't have a good solution for this. It's actually a pretty hard one, but thank you for just flagging it. Of course, as you said, not the UCLA mindful emails, obviously. Thank you. But we don't send them out very often. Okay. All right, everybody. Thank you for your reflections. And I hope it's helpful. And if you weren't here, this is just a kind of a continued exploration of how we take our mindfulness practice into life, how we explore how we behave in the world, right? Like, so mindfulness, we're sitting there and we're developing awareness and kindness and a kind of openness and equanimity, and then we go out and live in the world, and that can be hard. And how can we use our mindfulness to notice our behavior and then perhaps make a decision to act differently because we're drawn to something through a mindfulness practice? And that was kind of went to like what Hiroki was talking about earlier. Like, when I look at this, it affects my mind in a way that I don't want my mind to be like. I want a mind that is joyous, connected, peaceful, at ease. And so this we know from our meditation practice, right? Our meditation practice teaches us how, like the joy of a happy mind, right? A mind that is not encumbered by worry and regret. There's a beautiful saying, I'm just going to grab a little Buddhism in here for a moment, but because it's just a beautiful saying, it's not, you don't have to be Buddhist to appreciate this, but there's something when people are following an ethical life, there's language that's used that I just think is so special. It's the language is the bliss of blamelessness. The bliss of blamelessness. And what that means is you have a contentment and a joy because you're living an ethical life. You can't be blamed for things that you do because you're not doing things that are blameworthy. Now, that's not to say that any of us are perfect. I mean, I'm sure there's been many things I've done, even this week, that I'm like, ooh, why did I do that? But I intend that. I move in that direction towards a mind that is joyful, a mind that is free, and my actions reflecting that by being as ethical as I can. And then when I'm not ethical, which happens, and usually it's more subtle, it's not like I'm out robbing banks or something. I'm definitely not doing that. But when I do things that are against my values, what I care about, I forgive myself and I sometimes make amends. And I want to just take a moment to talk about making amends because the making amends is it's not always intuitively obvious what that means. And so the most helpful thing I think is talking to somebody and getting support around it. Like, if you do something, sometimes it's obvious, like you do something you wish you hadn't done to another person, you can say sorry and they go, it's okay, and you really sincerely apologize. That can be a kind of amends. But sometimes it's a deeper thing that you need to kind of make amends for, in which case it's helpful to get consultation from a wise person. And you don't ever want to make amends that could in some way backfire or hurt another person or hurt you, right? Like maybe you lied about something a long time ago and then you decide you have to tell the truth, but telling the truth would not be a great amends because it could hurt someone further. You know what I'm saying? So we want to be careful how we do it. So my biggest suggestion is get support if it's not intuitively obvious. And sometimes the amends that we make is an amends to ourselves. Like maybe we did something that we regret and we feel really bad about it, but maybe that person has passed, or maybe it just wouldn't make sense to say something to them. It just would not be a good idea. But or maybe we're just sitting here feeling really horrible about it. So one of the greatest amends you can make is to forgive yourself, to bring kindness to yourself. And then the sincere commitment to do something differently. And that's very powerful when you just really commit. And sometimes it's helpful for in an apology, for instance, when you let the person know, I did such a thing, I apologize. Here's the impact that I'm imagining it had on you. And I get it, and I'm gonna do my best not to do that in the future. Someone put in the chat, doesn't it make sense to ask the person we harm what sort of amends we can make? Sometimes it does, but sometimes you might not be able to, or sometimes they don't know the answer to that. So, but yeah, if it's the right situation, say, we might ask them, but it's not always the right situation for that. But certainly it's a good approach in some cases. So this is kind of just like the bigger picture that we're talking about with these ethical guidelines. And I want to pick another one. Because our class is sort of, we only have them half an hour. I'm going to go to one that's, I think, might take less time. And then we'll do the last one when I'm back next week. So the two that are left, so remember, the first one was not to kill, protect life. The second one we did was being wise with our speech. The third one we did was these consumption patterns. And the one I'm going to do now is about, it's technically called not stealing, but it's also like deep generosity. And then the last one we'll look at our sexual energy and sexual behavior as the final one. Okay. So let me talk about this particular guideline. So give me one sec, like get my notes here. Okay, so there's a lot of ways of talking about this precept, but the basic one is don't steal things, right? Like, and I'm guessing that most of you are not doing that, but there's many nuances and many subtleties, and also there's the other side of it, which is not just not stealing, but also giving and generosity. And there is a so another way of framing it is not taking what hasn't been offered to you. So that's like unless something has been offered to you, it's not yours to take necessarily. And sometimes we don't know if something has been offered to us. So there's a part of it of like kind of finding out, has this been offered to you? I remember when I was younger, I was on a meditation, like 3 month meditation retreat. And I had a job to clean one of the, like to vacuum one of the teacher's rooms. And I would go into the teacher's room and there was this bowl of chocolate sitting there. And every day I'd walk past the chocolate and I'd think, oh, I want chocolate. I want chocolate, but it hasn't been offered to me. It hasn't been offered to me. And I was just like practicing this precept so hard. And at the end of the retreat, I talked to him and I said, I've been working really hard to be careful not to take the chocolate because it wasn't offered to me. And he goes, well, you could have had it. It was for anybody. And I was just like, no, how could you not tell me? So sometimes you can ask, is my point. Like things may be offered and we don't know. But that's, so that's like a little thing. But what do we do to protect people's belongings, to keep people feeling safe, essentially? Like when we live in a world where we're not fearful of things being taken from us, stolen, and so on, then we can live in safety and in peace. And that's sort of the basics of it. But then it has like deeper ramifications here. That's not all that is. So how might but let's just and then oh, so then the next level is living with a generous heart. How do we live with generosity, and what is this kind of like antidote to the a life of where we feel like we need to take? So see, how might it ma manifest in our lives? One might be stealing, which I guess, I've now having a teenager, I've learned about how many teenagers go through a shoplifting phase. I don't know if any of us ever did that as children, but I've learned of several people, not my child, of course, at least so I hear. But anyway, they do go through that because this sense of like, I want that, they're going after things. But there's also like, okay, borrowing something and not giving it back. Is that going against this guideline? And this is, as always, for us to decide, for us to pay attention to and make our own decisions about, right? Like maybe I didn't do that, right? Or I mean, There's some things that are very cut and dried and clear, and some things that aren't at all. So just for you to kind of pay attention and think about, like, what do I do in my life? What about cheating? Okay, here's a big, so most of you are no longer, I know maybe there's a few of you are in school, but have you explored cheating? Now here comes the big one. Now that there is AI, what are we using it for? Are we using it for, I mean, it's less of an issue if you're not a student, but if you are a student, is that cheating or is it not cheating? I tend to think it is, but there are ways of using it that can be supportive. And of course, AI is on this like huge ramp up to God knows what. So, but I just want to throw it in here because that's an issue that I think has to now be thought about ethically. And I would argue that it is growing at a, it is far outpacing our ability to ethically guide it. And the philosophers who are thinking about the ethics are, I don't know if they're getting into the, I don't think that they're keeping pace with what's happening. So anyway, that's an aside, but it'd be great to bring more ethical guidelines into AI. So someone just wrote, taking more than our share seems like a form of stealing. Yeah, in terms of what this precious planet offers us in the day-to-day life. Yes, we're going to talk about it on a larger scale level in a moment. Let me just do like kind of personal, and then we'll go exactly where you're heading, Maureen. Other things that we might be other ways it might manifest for ourselves in subtle ways. I mean, this is not subtle, but our taxes, do we report all our income? And then someone else might say, yeah, but I don't support the government. And so why should I give my taxes? You know, I mean, this is like nuanced, as everything here is nuanced. If you're supporting what you think is something that's unethical, is it okay to be unethical? You know, I mean, I'm not going to answer this for you, but these are very important questions. Not being fully honest around money or people's belongings. Like these are some of the ways that this precept manifests itself. So what tends to happen, and this is, so I'm always interested in like what is the mechanism underlying it? Why do we take, why do those 14-year-old girls feel like they need to go to Sephora and take many things, which is what I've seen happen. Well, I don't want to get into the psychology of adolescent girls because I think in some ways in that case it's about kind of showing power and agency in a like off distorted way. But for many of us, when there is a need to not be completely honest around taking what has not been offered to us, there's often a sense of scarcity, like there's not enough. And I need that, and no one's going to miss it. And if I just take that little bit, no one's, it's who's going to, it's going to matter. So it's coming from a place where we might feel disconnected to ourselves and also disconnected to others. When we see the interdependence, when we connect with the way that we are all deeply, deeply connected, we don't want to take from someone. We're not going to raise ourselves up and put someone down. We're not going to hurt someone because we are all so deeply dependent upon each other. And when we live in places of scarcity and connectedness in our psychology, that's often when these behaviors happen. And not just the stealing one, but all the different ones that we've talked about. Also, it's rooted in the sense that I deserve something, and my happiness is more important than anyone else's. So that can be something where we just feel like I have to have it. Like, you know, it's about me, right? And then we then take it, you know, or it doesn't matter if I plagiarize because I need to do this right and I need to do it, you know. So just to paying attention to these things, or sometimes we're holding on tightly out of fear, right? Out of fear. So when we're acting from these places, we're not seeing a couple of important things. We're not seeing that happiness comes from living a life of integrity. That happiness comes from not holding tightly onto things, but from a quality of sharing and letting go and connecting. And that the greatest joy that people have is the love that they share and the feeling of trustworthiness that we can build in our families and communities and job situations, and that we can be this bearer of goodness. This is where true joy comes. So true contentment is not dependent on things, on getting things, on, you know, getting. It's on this inner happiness that all of you know, because you wouldn't be practicing mindfulness if you didn't already know this. So what, when we can live from a place of safety and non-scarcity and a sense also that peace of like, I don't need such and such to be happy. Oftentimes we get caught in a complete confusion that if we can have something, whatever the thing is, that's what's going to make us happy. And a lot of times that's really a misconception. It's a false perception. Happiness is not dependent on getting that thing. It's dependent on our inner experience, right? They always say happiness is an inside job. And also, all of the research points to that generosity makes us happier, right? When we live, being ethical, being true, being good to ourselves, it makes us happier. And generosity is the quality of heart that's linked to this. And so, so that's what we want to cultivate, and we'll kind of play with that in a little bit. So now going back to what that person was asking earlier, which was what about living in a world where most institutions practice, and a lot of people practice the opposite, you know, a world of corruption and greed and needing and thinking that my happiness is going to come when I get my next level of, you know, wealth and things and so on. And what about institutions that have profited from greediness and exploitation? What about the fact that we're living on land that has was stolen from Native people? We know this historically. What about the fact that the economy as it exists today is based on a legacy of enslavement? You know, these are the really heavy questions that come from this precept. How can we make, like, what can we do? What does that ask us to do or to look at in a world where things are interconnected and there's no way to be free from these systems? These systems are everything. You know, that phone that we've been talking about, who knows what kind of exploitation is connected to this phone? Probably, you know, the mining that happens for the minerals and the chips and like everything is connected. So it doesn't necessarily mean that in order to have a pure kind of pure life that we have to live off the grid and grow our own food and not use technology, and like, because that's not very realistic. I'm quite aware of that, but it's finding, getting curious about ourselves, getting curious about what I can live with, getting curious about what would push me a little bit to be more generous, maybe. And generosity, by the way, doesn't have to be money. Generosity can be with our time. Generosity can be generosity of spirit. There's so many ways in which we can explore this particular ethical guideline, and it's not easy. And I just really want to acknowledge that it's super challenging in these times where everything around us, we're seeing the opposite, and more or less with all of the guidelines, right? With the precept not to kill, there's massive wars going on right now, right? Horrible stuff where people are, I mean, with this speech, there's tremendous, you know, large scale deception. And with the consumption patterns, there's addiction and drug and alcohol abuse. And then there's the selling of these devices that are needed to supposedly keep us happy that are like causing all of this. And then And then here we see the structures of greed that are so profound. So I'm not trying to doing this to make it all heavy, but I just want us to see that these guidelines, as I've been saying all along, they're not just personal. They're a way of looking at the world and then deciding, what do I want to do? And so for me, like the way that I look at it, because I don't do much in the way of, at this point in my life anyway, I'm not stealing. I try to be really ethical with what I take. You saw I couldn't even take chocolate from a bowl. But how generous can I be? And how much do I donate money and to what causes? And those are kinds of questions for me that I look at quite a bit and, you know, try and experiment with different things to what feels generous, what feels like it opens my heart, what feels like I'm not living in a sense of me, 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 I'm so important, I'm in scarcity, to a sense of like open-heartedness. And this is, and I just want to be really clear, we're all at different levels and different means. So there's not like there's supposed to be a way you should be generous like this or like that. There's many ways that we can practice generosity. So in the spirit of this, I want to share with you, going back also to the general topic, I have a dog trying to get in. 1 second. There is, that these guidelines were, there are many, many, many translations of these guidelines. And there's one, actually, let's pause for a minute because I'll share this at the end because I see people are starting to put comments into the chat. So let's stop here and see. Let's see. When you introduced the idea of wise consumption, my first thought was about the companies we support with our dollars and how to handle that. Yeah. So you can see how these guidelines are kind of connected to each other, right? And it's a great question. Like what to make our life comfortable or to like what is going on in that particular company and how do we work with that? And yeah, these are things for each of us to sort of to grapple with. So I'll just take a pause before I show you this other thing and let's hear how. And let's see if there are any questions or comments about what I've said, and then I'll share that. Manager said, I've designed a 9-step outline for ethical and responsible AI for creators and designers to follow, which is based on the practice of self-analysis and impact assessment, which I'll be publishing soon. Well, that's fantastic. We need more and more of that stuff out there. So let us know when it becomes available. Sounds great. Someone was asking about who are the AI philosophers I recommend. Marv has a good friend who named Andre, whose last name I can't remember. I can remember next week. I'll get it for you next week. He's published a lot. He's a, you know, an academic on responsible use of AI. I will get back to you on that. Yeah. Any other comments, thoughts, questions about what we've been talking about? Okay, let me just share my screen for a moment so I can show you something, which is there's a place, it used to be called Manzanita Village. So it was an outcropping of Thich Nhat Hanh's community. It was two teachers. One was Catriona Reed and the other was Michelle. Oh, I can't believe I can't remember her last name. I'll remember it in 2 seconds, but anyway, and they had like a sort of Thich Nhat Hanh center in Southern California. Now they've shifted and they've moved on to other things, but they developed a beautiful version of these ethical guidelines. And I'm going to share the screen and read them to you, and then I'll give it to you just so you can have it. And I'm going to read them. So hang on if you're listening sometime in the future. And the reason I'm reading to you right now is because they really have a a larger global perspective in thinking about these guidelines. So I want to share this because I think they've done a good work around this. So give me a minute while I show you this. And then I will give you a copy of it. Okay. So I'll read them, and just as you listen to them, think about how this broadens the kind of personal into the larger scope. Aware of the violence in the world and the power of nonviolent resistance, I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations, and vow to cultivate the compassion that seeks to protect each living being. So that's different than don't kill, right? It is don't kill is included in here, but in it is also this invocation essentially of the earth and the future generations and the ancestors and the commitment to compassion. So it's a beautiful, beautiful formulation. And for some of you, it might not speak to you, but just to kind of take these in. So here's the second one. And this is the one we're working on today. I remember I didn't go in order. Aware of the poverty and greed in the world and of the intrinsic abundance of the earth, I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations, it's repeated every time, and vow to cultivate the simplicity, gratitude, and generosity that have no limits. So these are all framed in a very positive, beautiful way. Third one, someone will do next week. Aware of the abuse and lovelessness in the world and the healing that is made possible when we open to love, I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations, and vow to cultivate respect for the beauty and erotic power of our bodies. So we'll talk more about that next week. Aware of the falsehoods and deceptions in the world and the power of living and speaking the truth, I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations, and vow to cultivate the ability to listen and clarity and integrity in all I communicate by my words and actions. So that's the speech one, just beautiful framing of it. And then the last one, aware of the contamination and desecration of the world and my responsibility for life as it manifests through me. I just love that. I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations, and vow to cultivate discernment and care in what I take into my body and mind. And that was the one we did last week, the consumption patterns. So I'm moved. I feel moved just reading that to you. And let me give you it as a file. And if you're listening and you're not here, because these are put on our app, that just Google Manzanita Village precepts. Okay. So hold on, let me put that into your chat. So that is, so that's just our sense of how we can really think broadly. And for some of us, working individually is exactly where we need to be. And particularly, I know, around the speech one and the consumption one, that's a very personal one for a lot of us. And then the other, some of them, we may be looking in the domains, in the larger domains of institutions and the world globally. We can like use that as a way to audit, like, hey, this is breaking that guideline. You know, it's not okay. I'm going to stand up for this. I'm going to give money to support something that's opposed to it. One organization I really love related to speech is the Center for Digital Health, that's really monitoring. It's really monitoring how, where they see hate speech in the internet. And I love to, it's an organization I really support because it's, I think it's a direct outcropping of that, what is it, fourth precept, fourth guideline around how we do speech. Okay, so what I'd like to do is just take a minute to pause and breathe together. And I want us to reflect on this generosity and non-stealing guidelines. So let's take a few minutes to first just to sense into ourselves, taking a breath or two. Noticing where you are. So in hearing about this particular ethical guideline, where is your edge? Like, where is something that you want to explore? And remember, what we can do is we can pick a thing to explore and then try to work on it. And then as we do it, notice what comes up using our mindfulness, noticing how it affects us. And then maybe if we need to forgive ourselves, make amends, there's all sorts of possibilities. So where might be a way that I want to explore this? And it might be personal, like, oh, I'm always borrowing books from my friends and I never give it back, right? It could be something like that. I'm going to really work on giving them back. Where do I take something that's not offered to me? And see if anything pops into your mind here. Is there a way that I'm just not living in my values around taking, coming from a place of scarcity? Okay, so then notice if something arises for you and it may or may not. And then let's look at the other side. How might I want to be more generous? Maybe I want to increase the size of the tips I give to servers. Maybe I want to give more time to a relative of mine who is sick. Maybe I want to, I don't know, what do you want to do? What would feel generous? What would feel like you're living by this guideline? If it's not refraining from something, it's what can I open to? That would be just like, oh yeah, this would be living by over me. And that might be a decision to give some money to something, but no expectation around that. Just it could be anything. How can I live with more generosity? Refrain or expand? And if you're concerned with structures in the world that are connected to greed, maybe there's something you want to do specifically around that. Maybe that's going to come to your mind. So notice what's arisen, what might be something you can commit to. And if you are feeling like, oh, I can't figure it out, we'll listen to what other people want to do. Maybe you can take one of theirs, or if you want to go back to any of the other guidelines we did, that's fine as well. So notice how you're feeling. Maybe take 1 minute to imagine you doing that thing. How does that feel? Okay, so when you're ready, open your eyes and the meditation. All right, if anybody is willing, I'd love to put into the chat what you're thinking you might try this week. And in just so we can get a little sense of that. Someone said there's so many good causes now, and it's hard to select which ones to support. I know, I hear you. So maybe a practice this week might be to do a little research. Kind of listening to your heart and like, oh, this is what I really care about. I think the research shows that it's better to give more deeply to something than to kind of smatter give, like a little here, a little there. So what is my heart? What is my issue that feels really important to me? and then maybe research it and look it up, look up the charities and see, you know, and then ultimately, you don't have to make any decision right away, but that could be a practice this week. Someone else wrote, clarify boundaries to not violate them. Okay, great. Great. That's a different approach to it, but yeah. I need to go back to wise speech. Working on that would be a way to be generous and stop stealing another's energy. Interesting. Okay, now we're starting to see the way they intertwine. That's cool. Okay, great. I've worked really hard to set boundaries to protect my time. However, I think now is a time to lean into community, and part of that is contributing my time to friends and loved ones more generously. Great. I love that. And I think that it's like you did something that was really useful and helpful to you. And then when you start to see yourself a little out of balance, you notice it and then you can open up more. And I mean, that's how things often work. We go one way and then we're like, wait a minute, I think I need to go a little more in the other direction. So it sounds terrific. Give my family more of my time and being more present with them. Beautiful. It's a wonderful act of generosity. My heart wants to help with rescue dogs. We'll explore opportunities to help. Great. Those dogs will be so happy. Awesome. So these are some great ideas and just ways of thinking about it. Wait, a few more. Practicing simplicity for my ideas of accomplishment, what I believe I must accomplish. Generosity by giving up competitiveness wisely. Okay, so this is another spin on it. Right, it's like in a way it's kind of about being generous to yourself, like not assuming that you have to accomplish everything and finding, as you said, more simplicity with that. And that's a really generous act to yourself. And then also you're saying giving up competitiveness wisely. So that's a lot. You're giving yourself Hiroki, you're giving yourself a tall order. You might want to make it a little simpler, but or just explore and see how it shows up this week. All right, so next week we'll check in about these, and then we will I'll do the final one that we haven't done, and then I'll complete this ethics series. But it's so lovely to be with you in this way and to hear. I mean, it just like when you read the news and all you see is non-ethics. It's so nice to hear about people wanting to deepen and develop their integrity in this world is so important. So let's just take a moment to breathe together and wish each other well, offering kindness, care, and wishing that whatever we've committed to, that we will be able to learn and grow from it during this week. All right, everyone. Someone was asking, are the video recordings of all the ethics classes available? They are available on the UCLA Mindful app, and you should see ethics part one, part two, part three, like that. Okay. And upcoming things, we don't have a lot scheduled yet. We're just in a kind of scheduling period, but I'm going to be announcing a new class, and we have a retreat in Southern California, and there'll be maybe some other things. So keep a lookout for our newsletter and more to come in the coming weeks. And I will see you next week. So thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.